week we'll get into an analysis, a dissection, an explanation of this information and what we should make of it. So just saying up front, this is going to end without a lot of explanation. That's intentional. I want to cover a certain portion of information and then ask you to tune in next week for lesson 216 for the analysis and explanation of this information. So all that being said, let's look at the notes. Again, this is lesson 215, the AV 1611, examining the marginal notes, textual variants / alternative textual readings, and let's get into the introduction. In lesson 212, we began looking at the marginal notes found in the authorized version of 1611. In doing so, we surveyed a couple different approaches to understanding them. Then, in lesson 213, we focused on how the AV sought to mitigate the partisan and political notes found in the Geneva Bible that were a problem for King James. So that's what we looked at in lesson 213. More recently, in lesson 214, we laid out the following points that we would be considering with respect to the marginal notes. All right? So number one was an Old Testament sample chapter. We looked at Genesis chapter 1. Number two was a New Testament sample chapter. We looked at Romans chapter 1. And then we also, in lesson 214, we talked about marginal verse rewrites. And there were two categories there. There were complete verse rewrites, and then there were partial verse rewrites. And then I also said in lesson 214 that I wanted to talk about textual variants / alternative textual readings. And then another category that I just labeled other notes of interest. All right. So if you look then before the table there, the first three points listed above were covered in lesson 214. Old and New Testament sample chapters, Genesis 1 and Romans 1, as well as marginal verse rewrites. So we've already talked about the first three. So again, last time we talked about Old Testament sample chapter, Genesis 1, the New Testament sample chapter, and then we looked at the two different categories of marginal verse rewrites. We did that last week in lesson 214. All right. Since the completion of lesson 214, my friend and fellow researcher Alex Hanna provided me with the following statistical breakdown of the marginal verse rewrites, should say rewrite, I think, material presented in lesson 214. So, what Brother Hanna has done is, I wish I would have had this last week. And by the way, I have gone back, and this table that we're going to cover, I have gone back and added it to the end of the notes from last week. So it's there now. It wasn't there when I presented them to you last Sunday because we added this last a week ago Monday, just about now. But let's look at this information, okay? Notice you have the number of verses. So in the Old Testament, there are 23,145 verses in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, there are 7,957 verses, and this math is obviously for a King James Bible, okay? So the total is 31,102 verses in the canonical Bible. That would be the Old and the New Testament. So we're not talking about the Apocrypha here, only the canonical Old and New Testaments. Okay? So let's look at some of the data. So there were total marginal rewrites. There were 12 of those. Okay? There were 12 of those. So the total number of verses then of the whole Bible that have a total verse or total marginal rewrite is only 0.039%. Of all the verses in the whole Bible, only this percent, 0.039%, have a complete marginal rewrite. So are we talking here about a large number of cases or an extremely infinitesimally small number of cases? Okay. Then if you go to the next category, partial marginal rewrites, there were 8 of those. So that comes out to 0.026% of all the verses in the Bible have a partial marginal rewrite. So if you take the total partial and the total marginal and the partial, that was 20 verses. Weighed against all the verses in the whole Bible, that is only 0.064% of all of the verses in the whole Bible have either a total verse rewrite in the margin or a partial verse rewrite in the margin. So again, are we talking here about a large number of cases or an extremely small number of cases? Okay. And then we can break it down even further between the Testaments. So here we have Old Testament total marginal rewrites. Of the 12 of those, 11 of them are for the Old Testament. based upon a percentage of Old Testament verses, that is only 0.05% of all the verses in the Old Testament have a total marginal rewrite in the margin. We could do the same thing for the partial marginal rewrites. Again, there's 8 of those. So all of the partial marginal rewrites are for the Old Testament, and that comes out to 0.03% of the Old Testament is a partial verse rewrite. We can then do the same for the New Testament. New Testament total marginal rewrites, 1, comes out to 0.01% of the New Testament, and there were 0 partial marginal rewrites in the New Testament. Okay? So we have a statistical analysis here to add to our thinking. So when we think about what we were discussing last Sunday, the instances where the translators either rewrote an entire verse in the margin or partial part of a verse, more than a few words, it is an extremely small number of cases that this is happening in. So go to the top of page 2. Okay? So, in summation, there are a total of 20 verses out of a total of 31,102 in the canonical text for which there are total or partial rewrites in the margins of the AV. This equates to only 0.064% of the text. Now, the reason I'm stressing this is because this is a vast minority of the verses have this situation happening. It's very small compared to the total number of verses in the entire Bible. So, remember I suggested to you that in these 20 cases, these might signify places where the translators could not come to a consensus on how the text should read, so they put an alternative for an entire verse in the margin, okay? Let's just work with that premise for a minute. If that's true, this is only occurring in 0.064% of the canonical text, that they are not able to come to a consensus, and so they put an alternative reading for the entire verse or a large section of the verse into the margin. Okay? So, before we move on, does anybody have any questions or comments? So that's still sort of a little bit of follow-up from what we were seeing last Sunday. Anybody have any questions or comments? Mike, did you have any thoughts on the statistics there or not? I was wondering if you would.
To me, the statistics part is kind of irrelevant. You can tell from the numbers that it's very, very small.
I agree, but I think it's an important inclusion just to get it down as a matter of record for somebody who might be looking at this. And again, that brings me to the point that you guys need to remember that, like, yes, I'm teaching you that are here immediately in the room, but this is having a much greater sort of audience than just you folks, okay? So let's go to the next point. Consequently, in the current lesson, we will tackle the next topic of the study noted above, i.e. marginal notes recording textual variants / alternative textual readings. We'll be following the same format that we used in Lesson 214. For each example, I will include a screenshot from the 1611 along with a modern spelling transcription underneath each image. So we'll follow the same format that we had last time. Okay. Now, I do want to say, though, here, before we get started with this, the following. Before getting started, I would also like to say that this lesson seeks to address a subject matter that I have never seen discussed with any level of depth by folks on either side of the textual / translation debate. Okay? I have never seen what we're going to be talking about here discussed with the level of depth that we're going to endeavor to discuss it. Okay? So, therefore, while I have tried to be as thorough as possible, there is still more work that needs to be done on this topic. And I would welcome feedback or additional information to help fill out this picture. Okay? So I went as far into this as I could go, given the constraints of time, access to information, other things, okay? I believe that what I have gathered and put together is a major step forward in a conversation about this topic, but it is admittedly needing more information. So I do not intend for these notes to be taken as the final word on this, but they are a major step forward in understanding of this particular subject matter as I have evaluated the situation. So before we get into the first point, does anybody have any questions or comments? Okay, so textual variants, alternative textual readings. Recall from lesson 212 that the primary function of the double vertical lines marking is to denote, in the words of translator Samuel Ward, quote, where a Hebrew or Greek word admits two meanings of a suitable kind, the one was expressed in the text, the other in the margin, i.e., alternative English renderings. Now, did we not last Sunday look at samples of that in Genesis 1 and Romans 1? Okay? So we've seen where the double vertical lines were used by the translators to note places where a Hebrew or Greek word admits two meanings of a suitable kind, the one expressed in the text, the other in the margin. Now remember, here I'm quoting Samuel Ward's testimony from the Synod of Dort in 1618. Samuel Ward was a translator. He goes to the Synod of Dort and he gives testimony to the process that the King James translators used. Okay? In the same lesson, so this is still lesson 212, in the same lesson we observed a secondary function of this practice according to Samuel Ward. Quote, to be done where a different reading was found in good copies. Okay? So let's stop there. Put another way, occasionally the double vertical lines indicate a place where there was a variant reading in the Reformation era Hebrew and Greek source texts used by the King James translators. So there are two uses for the double vertical lines. One use is to note alternative suitable renderings, one in the text, one in the margin. Okay? And then Ward says, quote again, to be done where a different reading is found in good copies. So that's a second function, okay? So most of the time the double vertical lines indicate simply an alternative English rendering. Sometimes the double vertical lines demarcate a alternative or a textual variant available in good copies. Now I need you to see that is Ward's testimony. He says, quote, to be done where a different reading is found in good copies. That's not me putting words in his mouth. That is what he said. Is everybody following that? Okay? Put another way, occasionally the double vertical lines indicate a place where there was a variant reading in the Reformation era Hebrew and Greek source text used by the King James translators. Okay? The number of marginal notes of this second category is very small compared with the number of alternative English renderings demarcated by the double vertical lines. When a textual variant is being cataloged in the margin, the note usually takes one of the following five forms. Okay? Number one, let me make sure I get up to speed. Okay? Number one, some read. Number two, some copies read. Did I miss one? Number one, some read. Number two, some copies. Number three, some copies read. Number four, Greek copies. Number five, the most ancient copies. So those are five phrases that are used in the marginalia of the 1611 to talk about when this category is in play. Is everybody following that? Okay. So let's look now at my list. There are nine occurrences of notes that have some read, and then I give you the references. Okay? There are four instances where the marginal notes say some copies, and again, I've given you the references. There are four occurrences of the notation some copies read. There are two occurrences of Greek copies. And there is one occurrence of many ancient copies. Now, before I go any further, is everybody understanding what I'm saying? Okay? So, the vast majority of the time, the double vertical lines are simply stating what we saw in the first quote there from Samuel Ward, where a Hebrew or Greek word admits two meanings of a suitable kind, the one expressed in the text, the other in the margin. A second usage, though, of the double vertical lines according to Ward is in the next quote there, to be done where different readings were found in good copies. And these are the five different forms that that takes. Some read 9 times, some copies 4 times, some copies read 4 times, Greek copies 2 times, and many ancient copies 1. Yeah.
Could you clarify what he meant by good copies?
So that's a great question. And I think by the time we're done with this, we'll have some inkling about that.
And in the paragraph above that, he says 2 meanings of a suitable kind. So what does he mean by a suitable kind?
I think he means there, you could say it this way, you could say it that way, and they would both be correct. That one wouldn't necessarily be more right or more wrong than the other. They're alternative English renderings. Okay. Now, what he means by good copies, I think probably he means by reputable, known source texts of his era, would be the way I would understand that.
He's talking about the manuscripts.
He's talking about manuscripts, translations, okay. Other things that were available to them, is the way I take the meaning of good copies. And I think that makes sense as we sort of dissect some of this as we move forward. Okay, now let's go to page 3. So, there's only 20 of these, just like there was only 20 of the ones from last week. Okay, the 20 marginal notes listed above were found using Calvin George's article, an exhaustive listing of the marginal notes of the 1611 edition of the King James Bible on the Literatura Bautista website. And again, I've showed you this before, but that's this website right here. Okay? This is claiming to be an exhaustive list of all of the marginal notes. We've gone through some of his introduction back in lesson 212, and then starting here, he explains the methods that they used, and then he starts to list out all of the marginal notes. Okay? So let's go back to... Whoops, I just closed something I didn't want to close, so just bear with me for a second. We're on top page 3, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. All right, so let's start that point over. So the 20 marginal notes above were found using Calvin George's article, an exhaustive listing of the marginal notes of the 1611 edition of the King James Bible on the Literatura Bautista website. As the title suggests, George's article purports to be, quote, an exhaustive list of the marginalia found in the 1611 minus the cross-references. So he did not give the cross-references, only the daggers and the double vertical lines. Okay? The 20 notes in question were found by searching George's article for the words copies and read. Additional searches were run as well that turned up nothing. So let me show you this if I can, just briefly, so that you understand the methodology. If I can get my computer to cooperate with me. What's that, Mike? Oh. So here is the website. Okay, again, this is claiming to be an exhaustive what? List. So if I go to this website and I hit Control F and I'm going to just search for the word copies, it will find all of the marginal notes that talk about some copies. So I can find all of them, and then I can check those against the 1611 to see if they're correct. Okay? The other thing that I can do here is I can take and I can search for the word read. Okay? And you will see, if I get rid of all this, some of this doesn't apply, obviously, because it's finding any words with the letters R-E-A-D in it. So let me be a little more specific with searching. I'll just search for, just so you can see how this works, I'll just say Greek copies. So if you search for copies, you'll find every time it says Greek what? Copies. If you search for some copies, or copies read, You'll find all of that, those, some copies what? So the methodology that I used to find all of this was to use this exhaustive list on the Literature Bautista website as a search tool to then find all of these notes. Does that make sense? So you need to understand my process here, okay? So the 20 notes in question were found by searching George's article for the words copies and read. Now I did run, as I say in the parenthesis there, additional searches were run as well that turned up nothing. So I searched for other various things that I thought might give me a hit on some other way of saying it and didn't find anything. So please also note that I only focused on the canonical text of the Bible, i.e. the Old and New Testaments. The apocryphal books were not a focus of this study. Of the thousands, so I'm right back here now, of the thousands of marginal notes found in the 1611, only 20 indicate the presence of textual variants in the source text used by the King James translators. The following images catalog all 20 occurrences. So, see, we're already 25 minutes in and we haven't even looked at the examples yet. So that's why I split these notes into two sections. So let's look at the first category, some read, okay? So the verse right here is Ezra 8:14, okay? Ezra 8:14, notice the double vertical lines here on the spelling of this name. Zabud?
Close enough,
okay? Notice the double vertical line goes to the margin, and it's or Zakor, as some read. Okay? Now, and then what I did, guys, is I did a search to try to find out where... Now, notice, all it says is somewhat. It doesn't name a manuscript. It doesn't say a translation. All it says is some read. So that's pretty open-ended, right? So then you have to kind of search, well, what should I search? So what I searched was a text on the Masoretic Text, the TR Bibles website. I searched for prior English Bibles, and I looked to see if there was any note maybe at the Net Bible website about some of this. So Wycliffe reads Zakor. So Wycliffe reads the same as what they're giving here in the margin, okay? As does the Douay Old Testament also reads Zakor. Now I know now that Wycliffe and Reims are translating the Latin Vulgate. So I know that a source for this spelling could potentially be now what? The Latin Vulgate. Because the Wycliffe Bible and the Douay Old Testament are both translating the Latin Vulgate. Okay? So let's go to the next. The translation reads with an obscurity, the Lacunic Greek recension, the Syriac Peshitta. Now here it is. And the Vulgate. Okay? Reads Zakor rather than Kethum in the Masoretic text. So now I have a further check by looking at the notes in the Net Bible that the Vulgate does indeed have this spelling, which is the spelling that is used by Wycliffe and what? Reims, and that the Syriac Peshitta also uses that spelling. So I can get some understanding now of what some read means. It could be referring to the Douay Old Testament. It could be referring to the Wycliffe Bible, and it is probably most certainly referring to the Vulgate, which reads with that alternative spelling because that's where Wycliffe and Reims got it. You guys following that? So you can do some figuring. Now this, what I just went through right here, okay, is where more work needs to be done. So I've given you, at this moment, my best understanding at what some read could be referring to, and I think, for now, that reasoning is as good as anyone else's reasoning, because I have not heard anyone else give any reasoning. Okay? So it probably needs more attention, but for now, that's a good start. You guys following that? Okay? Psalm 102.
Excuse me on that.
Yeah.
Word, is that name of a person, mm-hmm. or is that something else?
It's just name of a person.
Oh, so it's just different.
Different spelling. It'd be like spelling Brian, Brian, versus Brian, Bryan.
There's a lot of variation.
There's a lot of variations in the spelling, and you'll see later on that that's a quarter of these 20, five of them are all spelling issues. How to spell proper names. Okay? Look at 102. Psalm 102, verse 3. So in the text, here it says, like smoke. And then in the margin it says, or as some read into smoke. So go to page 4. I could not find anything else on that. So some of these I found stuff for, some of them I couldn't. Go to page 4. The next one is Song of Solomon 5:4. The text here at the end of the verse reads, for him. The margin reads, or as some read, in me. So here's for him, double vertical lines. You go to the margin, or as some read, in me. So let's look at the analysis. The Great Bible reads within me, as does the bishops. The 1569 Spanish agrees with the Great Bible and Bishop's Bibles reading in me. Brother Yetzer, Christopher Yetzer helped me with that. And Robert Altert says, the received text reads a law for him, but the Septuagint and many Hebrew manuscripts read Eli, literally for you or upon me. So you can see that even within the prior English Bibles predating the King James, some of them had within me, they had basically the same thing that the King James is offering in the margin. Okay? So I think we have at least a good starting point to look at what does some read mean in this case. Is everybody following me? Matthew 1:11. Double vertical lines right here. Josias begat Jeconias and his brethren. Then the double vertical line summary, Josias begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Jeconias. Alright? The Geneva Bible reads, and Josias begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Jeconias, as does the Bishop's Bible. So the Geneva Bible and the Bishop's Bible both read, as does the alternative in the margin for some read. So I think you can see now, is the phrase some read very general and very generic, and could it be referring to anything that they were looking at? But there is no specific definitive meaning of what some read is referring to. Maybe it's referring to English Bibles, maybe it's referring to the Vulgate, maybe it's referring to, could be referring to any number of things when it just says somewhat. Some read, okay? Then there's a note also on this at the Net Bible that says, before the mention of Jeconiah, several medieval manuscripts add Jehoiakim, in conformity with the genealogy of 1 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 16. But this alters the count of 14 generations mentioned by the author of Matthew in chapter 5, verse 17. It is evident that the author is selective in his genealogy for a theological purpose. So do the translators are able to see that there's a textual reason, there's a theological reason related to 14 generations, and so they go with the reading that equals, in the main body of the text, that equals 14. So they are engaging here in a certain amount of, dare I say, text criticism, but it is being guided by a theological understanding of what the biblical text says. So if it says there's 14, they're going to go with the reading in the main body of the text that equals how many in the genealogy? 14. You following that? So as not to create a contradiction within the biblical text. I hope that makes sense to you. Mm-hmm. Go to page 5. 1 Corinthians 15:31. The text says, your. So, a prophet by your rejoicing. The margin has some read our. So the discrepancy would be your rejoicing versus what? Our rejoicing. The analysis tool, so underneath that, the open bullet, the analysis tool at the TexasReceptusBibles.com. Do we need to add the word website there? I think we might. The analysis tool at the Texas Receptus Bible website records a variant in the TR tradition at 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 31. And this is what they say, quote, "This verse is not fully supported by the Stephanus 1550, but is supported by Beza 1598. The variant read, our rejoicing instead of your rejoicing." Okay? So, and then look at the next point. Tyndale, Coverdale, Matthews, Great, and Bishop's Bible all read "our rejoicing," no doubt following the earlier editions of the TR. So the earlier editions of the TR had the variant "our rejoicing." Beza, 1598 Beza, the one the King James translators used, had "your rejoicing," like they have it in the text. Okay? And so we can track pretty clearly with what's going on here when they say "some read." Is everybody following that? So in this case, it is related to a discrepancy in the Greek. Not every time, though, when that you see "some read," is it referring to that. Ephesians 6:9. There are two double vertical lines here in this verse. We're looking at this one here, "your master also," which is in heaven. Your master also in heaven. So if you look at the reading here, so the text reads "your master also." The double vertical lines in the margin, some read both "your" and "their master." So there's a discrepancy, and all it says is "some read." Okay? Wycliffe reads, witting both "her Lord" and "yours." So it's got "her" and what? "Yours." As does the Reams, "knowing that the Lord both of them and" who? "You" is in heaven. Given the fact that Wycliffe and Reams were translations of the Latin Vulgate, it is possible, though not definitively proven, that the marginal notes found in the AV originated within the Vulgate tradition. Meanwhile, my friend and fellow researcher, and we need to add his name here, Christopher Yetzer, points out that the 1569 Spanish and he's going to kill me if I say this wrong. Diodati translated as both "your" and "their master." So these are two Protestant era foreign language translations, the Spanish and the Italian, that have the marginal note as the main reading. Okay. So here we now see other languages possibly being referred to under the note "some read." Now look, guys, I know this is a little bit technical here, so hopefully you're not lost. Is everybody following me?
Yep.
Okay, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. The main text says "for us," some read "for you." So we're talking about this part of the verse right here. Okay. The analysis tool at the Textus Receptus Bibles, we need to add website, records a variant in the TR tradition at 2:21. This verse is not fully supported by Beza 1598, but is supported by Stephanus 1550. Variant read "suffered for you" instead of "suffered for us." So you see the King James has in the text "for us," and then it says "some read for you." So this is exactly the variant that we're talking about here. All right, and then notice the further analysis. Geneva reads, "for Christ suffered for who?" Yeah. So does the Geneva read as the margins notes the other copies reading? Okay, so Geneva reads, "Christ suffered for you." So therefore, it is clear that the Geneva translators followed the Stephanus edition of the TR from 1550 at 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. The King James translators are following what they perceive to be the most updated edition of the TR, which would be the 1598 Beza. Is everybody following that? Okay. 2 Peter 2:11. The text reads "against them," and they note in the margin, "some read against themselves." Okay, against them versus against themselves. So here, the Great Bible reads, rallying judgment against, here it is, themselves. See that? Okay, and then as does the Reams New Testament, "bring not judgment against themselves." Okay?
If you look at the previous verse there, it seems like
to
them that work after the flesh against them.
So yeah, I would agree that. So I think they're saying that against them is the best reading that makes the most sense given the context. Noting still that are there other copies that have themselves in the, obviously there are, right? So the variant noted in the margin of the 1611 and 2 Peter 2:11 seems to stem from the Vulgate tradition, just because it's related to both their the Great Bible and the Reims New Testament. And then let's go to 2 Peter 2:18. The text reads clean. The margin says, or for a little, or a while, or for a while, as some read. Now I'm just going to say, this one to me befuddled me, and I could not for a long time understand what is going on. Why would, these don't seem to have any connection with each other at all, as you look at it on its face, okay? Now, Wycliffe does read that scaping a little, you can see it here, which is the marginal alternative, noting there in the margin of the AV, and the Reims New Testament follows suit by reading for a little while, escape. Okay? But the variant found in the margin of the 1611 at 2 Peter 2:18 could have originated from within the Vulgate tradition. Also, I want to say about this, judging from the critical apparatus, the difference between the main reading clean and the margin for a little is the difference in one character in Greek. You're talking one letter difference. So it could also very well simply be a typo in some of the editions of the Textus Receptus. That could also conceivably be why they say that in the margin. Although, as I've demonstrated, Wycliffe and Reims New Testament both read for a little while. Is everybody following that? Okay? Then that brings us to our, so that was the biggest category. Then that brings us to the next category, which is just a statement, some copies. So the first one in this category is 1 Chronicles 1:6. And again, it is the difference in the spelling of the name. Ripitha versus Dipitha. Okay? As it is in some copies. Now, if we look into this, we can see that the Great Bible reads Dipitha in 1 Chronicles 1:6. And then the Net Bible offered a little bit of help also by noting that many medieval Hebrew manuscripts, along with the LXX and the Vulgate, read Ripitha. And then they also note that at the end of the note there, the MT is the Masoretic text, reads Dipitha. So, how do you want to spell this name, is really the issue here. So there's really, that's a nothing burger as far as the meaning of the text. Okay? 1 Chronicles 1:7. Here we have another one. Duodamin? Danon? I know I'm butchering that.
Dodanon
versus Rodanon, as some, according to some copies. All right. Here again, the Net Bible says the Masoretic text and most medieval manuscripts of the parallel line list Genesis 10:4 read Dodanon. And if you have Rodanon. So again, how you spell that is really the issue. The next one is Ezra chapter 2, verse 33. This is another spelling issue. Hadid versus
Herod.
How do you spell the name? I couldn't find anything else on that one. Ezra chapter 10, verse 40, same thing, but it is again just a spelling issue. How do you spell this particular name? Anyone want to help me with those?
So it seems like they're both R and D, mixing up the R and the D.
You mean this one and the previous?
And the previous.
Yeah. So that's another spelling one there on Ezra chapter 10, verse 40. So really nothing to see there as far as anything of any significance. Then we come to page 9 and we have the statement now, some copies read. The first occurrence of this is in Acts 25, verse 6. Okay, and here we have the discrepancy between more than 10 days, or, as some copies read, no more than 8 or 10 days. Okay, so more than 10 days, or as some copies read, no more than 8 or 10 days. So what could this be referring to? Well, if we look at the analysis tool at the TexasReceptusBibles.com, need to add website again, records a variant in the TR tradition at Acts 25:6. The verse is not fully supported by Beza 1598, but is supported by the Stephanus 1550. Variant, read, not more than 8 or 10 instead of more than 10. The Geneva reads, okay, no more than 10 days. So it is clear that the Geneva translators follow the Stephanus edition from the TR from 1550, where there is support for that reading. Beza reads the way the King James text reads in the main body of the text, more than 10 days. Is everybody following that? So there it's pretty clear what they're talking about when they say some copies read. They're referring to discrepancies in the various printed editions of the Textus Receptus. James 2:18. We have, now I dealt with this one in my video responding to Mark Ward, one of my videos responding to Mark Ward about James 2:18 and some of the differences in the different TR copies. But the text says, notice the text says, without thy works, and some copies read by thy works. Okay? So the text says, without thy works, some copies read by thy works. Now, this would seem possibly to be a substantive difference in meaning until you really study what is going on here. This verse is an argument of rhetorical, it's a rhetorical argument about how related to the connection between salvation and works. And if you settle the variant either way, the force of the argument is still the same. Okay, and I'm not the only one that says this, Sylvia. We need to make a note that I need to expand my explanation here with a few more details that I did not include. So I want to expand my explanation at James 2:18. But that being said, if we look at the analysis tool at the TexasReceptusBibles.com, again, we need to insert the word website, records a variant in the TR tradition at James 2:18. This verse is not fully supported by the Stephanus 1550, but is supported by the Beza 1598. Variant read, show me thy faith by instead of show me thy faith without. Okay? Tyndale reads, by thy deeds, as do Coverdale, Matthews, Great, and Bishop's Bibles, which means, are they following a different iteration of the TR when they say, by thy deeds? So, some copies read could be, is obviously referring here to Greek printed editions, as well as prior English Bibles. Let's go to 2 Peter 2:2. Here we have a difference between, in the text, pernicious ways or lascivious ways, as some copies read. Pernicious, lasciviousness, different way of saying the same thing. Okay, not, to me, not a big deal. 2 John 1:8. Okay, so the double vertical lines are here on the word wrought. So it says wrought in the text. Go to the margin. Or gained. Some copies read, which ye have gained, but that ye receive. So wrought versus gained is the issue here. And I was not able to find any other information about what that was referring to. So nothing further to say on that example. And then we come to, now notice this next one is specific. It's referring to what? Greek copies. Now, let's take stock. So far, what have we looked at? I don't want to get this wrong, so I'm going to leaf back. So far, we have looked at 9 occurrences of some read, 4 occurrences of some copies, and 4 occurrences of some copies read. Now, in all 3 of those categories, I showed you that it could be a reference to Greek, It could be a reference to Hebrew. It could be a reference to prior English Bibles. It could be a reference to other foreign language Protestant era translations. It could be a reference to the Latin Vulgate. It could be a reference to the LXX. But now in this one, we're specifically talking about what kind of copies?
Greek
copies. So the first three categories, again, let me get them right. The first three categories, some read, some copies, and some copies read, are general statements that could be referring to any manner of textual differences that they encountered when they did their homework on their job. Greek copies, though, is going to be specific to actual what?
Greek
copies. Greek manuscripts, okay, or printed editions of the TR. So Greek copies, Matthew 20, the first one here is Matthew 26:26. Okay? And the difference here is at blessed it, right here. So the text reads blessed it. You follow double vertical lines to the margin. Many Greek copies have gave thanks. So the difference is blessed it versus what?
Gave
thanks. Okay? Now look at Tyndall reads, gave thanks. So does Tyndall read like the margin of the 1611?
Yep.
Tyndall reads gave thanks, as do Coverdale, Matthews, Great, and Bishop's Bibles. They all read gave thanks. Okay, so why might that be? Well, it's probably related to the fact that are they translating different iterations of the TR? Where the King James is following Beza, and Beza has blessed it instead of gave what? Gave thanks. Everybody following that? And then we come to page 11. And our first one here is Luke 17:36. So, notice that this is about the whole verse. Okay? So Luke 17:36, two shall be in the field, the one shall be taken, the other left. Notice the margin. This 36th verse is wanting in most of the Greek what? So here is our first occurrence of any kind of a note that says some Greek copies don't have this verse. That's what that means. Okay? That's what that means. Have we seen anything like this so far where they're saying this whole verse does not have any attestation in the Greek? And notice that's not what they're saying. They're just saying it's wanting in most of the Greek copies. Most does not mean what?
All.
So are there some Greek copies they're aware of that don't have the verse?
Yeah.
Are they aware of other Greek copies that do have the verse?
They must.
They must be. Did they put the verse in the text? So let's see if we can make sense out of this. Okay, look at underneath. Tyndall, Coverdale, Matthews, Great Bibles all omit verse 36. Okay? They all omit verse 36. Geneva and bishops have the verse. It is clear that the early editions of the Textus Receptus, edited by Erasmus, did not contain the verse, whereas later editions edited by Stephanus and Beza did. Now let me tell you how we know this. Okay? Tyndall doesn't have the verse. Tyndall is following Erasmus's, I believe, second or third edition. Alright? Coverdale is just revising Tyndall. Matthews. The Great Bible is essentially doing the same thing. None of them have verse 36, right? But then when we get to the Geneva Bible, does the Geneva Bible have verse 36? The Bishop's Bible has verse 36. The Geneva Bible is following the 1550 Stephanus Greek. The 1550 Stephanus Greek has the verse. The 1598 Beza has the verse. So when they say, this 36 verse is wanting in most Greek copies, they're not saying it's wanting in all of them. They're saying it's wanting in a handful of them, most of them. But are they aware of others that retain the verse? Okay. Several manuscripts, D, F, all this stuff is all code for specific manuscripts and text criticism. Add with several variations among them, 17 verse 36. The King James translators obviously include the verse in the text, telling me that they thought the verse should be there, but they are noting in the margin that they've seen copies that don't, they've seen Greek copies that don't what?
Okay.
That don't have the verse. Okay? So this is the only one so far that is even remotely like anything that we see in modern versions where they are omitting whole what?
Verses.
And let me be clear. The translators are not omitting verse 36. They're including verse 36. They believe the verse should be there. But they're noting in the margin that they've seen witnesses that don't have what?
The verse.
Okay? Now look. What's going to happen, and I'll show this to you next week, is a verse like this is not going to be used as a club to beat King James only people with. And you can understand already where the argument's going. See? Luke 17:36, they omit a verse. They call into question, based upon Greek evidence, whether the verse should be there. That's the same thing modern versions are doing. Really? Modern versions are doing that into the hundreds of times. The King James, so far, we've only seen one that is even remotely the case. So to say they're doing the same thing, you could say, well, that's just a quantitative difference. Difference in number, they're still doing the same thing. I'm going to show you when we go through the analysis that I don't think that's at all what's going on. And this is where, see, I'm already only have 5 minutes left and we still have one more example. Okay, so let's just cover that. The last one is the statement, ancient copies. Okay? And now here we're going to see, notice. So this is Luke 10:22. All things. So the vertical lines are right here at the beginning of the verse. Okay? All things. You follow double vertical lines for the margin. Many ancient copies add these words. And turning to his disciples, he said. So there are some copies that have those words at the beginning of verse 32. I'm sorry, verse 22. The analysis tool at the Texas Receptus Bibles Ad website, Sylvia?
Yes.
Okay, good, thank you. Mm-hmm. Records a variant in the TR tradition at Luke 10:22. This verse is not fully supported by the Stephanus 1550, but is supported by the Beza 1598. Add, and having turned to the disciples, he said at the beginning of the verse. So the King James translators are electing to follow the 1598 Beza, not the 1550 Stephanus, is my understanding of that. Okay? Now, this is where I have elected to end the notes online. You guys in the room here, you'll see at the bottom of page 11 that that's where I begin an analysis of all of this. Alright? So I've decided to make this a two-parter. So what I've done today is I've laid out for you the fact that there are 20 verses in the 1611 for which there are marginal readings that fall into one of five categories. Okay? Those being, some read 9 occurrences, some copies 4 occurrences, some copies read 4 occurrences, Greek copies 2 occurrences, and many ancient copies 1 occurrence, for which there is some noting of a variant, a spelling difference, something along those lines in the margins of the 1611. Okay? Now, what we will do next Sunday, next week, is we will go the next step, and I'm going to present to you this analysis. Now, the folks online, you guys don't have access to this. Only the people here have this in their copies, okay? Now, what I would recommend to all of you guys that are here in-house is that you just bring this with you. The only thing I'm going to do probably for next week's notes is I'll just add an introduction summarizing what we did today, and then we'll present the same analysis that you have already in the notes, okay? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody have any questions or comments about this? Now look, folks, again, this is what we're covering here, this is going to be an inconvenient truth to some people. All right? Again, I'll say what I said last week. You can either pretend like this doesn't exist, stick your head in the sand and pretend like it's not a reality, or you can address it, acknowledge it, and explain what's going on with this issue, which I'm going to attempt to do for you next week. I'll give the analysis of this, all right? So, to me, there's only one time in all of this where a verse is said to not have attestation in some of the Greek what? Well, they say many, but in many of the Greek copies. But many is not all. Are they aware of it in other ones? Okay, and they decide what to put in the text. So let's be clear. Are the King James translators engaging in a certain level of text criticism here when they decide this should be in the text and that should be in the margin? The answer is yes, but it is not the same thing as what modern text critics are doing when they go about to try to reconstruct the text of the Bible, and we're going to address that issue, and I'm going to show you that issue next time. Okay? That's part of what we will cover in the analysis. So does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah?
So if people that have issues, are they just making them out of the moment? I mean, it's such a minuscule...
The people that are making a mountain out of a molehill are the ones that will take these 20,
yeah.
these 20 that we just went over, and then they'll say, see, this is the same thing as these 130 in the NIV New Testament. There's 130 in the NIV New Testament alone. Not counting their Old Testament, there's 20 in the whole King James 1611. Okay, so there's a quantitative difference in terms of number, but there's also a qualitative difference in terms of what the notes are doing and the number of verses they're calling into question. Okay? But what the modern text critical community wants to do is they'll take one of these verses, they'll take either Luke 17:36 or they'll take Luke 10:22. I'll show you an example next week of somebody doing it. And they'll say, see, this is the same thing that goes on in modern versions. And I'm saying to you that is an extreme leveraging of something. And the other thing is that I've noticed is that the folks who do that, they never comment on how many total examples there are, like we've done here. They never talk about that. They'll take one example, they'll leverage it and they'll say, see, this is the same thing. And I'm saying to you, it is not the same thing. It is not the same thing qualitatively in terms of number, and it is not the same thing quantitatively in terms of type. Does that make sense?
Yeah.